Roger Cheng, the executive director at CNET, overseeing breaking news. By the way, for all things digital, CNET should be bookmarked in your browser if it's not. Roger was on the telecommunications beat for Dow Jones Newswires and the Wall Street Journal for about a decade. And boy, he knows his stuff, and I'm counting on him having every one of the answers. Okay, didn't put you too much on the spot, Roger. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm real interested in this topic. It's near and dear to my heart because I think that the state of broadband in this country is just abysmal. And I want to talk a little about that, but also get into 5G. You know, many decades ago when it was all an ISDN world, I had to be like 20,000 feet from the telco central office or else. And, you know, now when I can't get fiber to the house, I'm stuck with shared resources like cable broadband, and they'll do these horrible commercials telling me that they've got gigabit speeds, and then not even in a muffled voice will they mention, oh yeah, our upstream's about 30 megs or what have you. But bottom line to it is, even then, I pray that I'm in a good node. And, you know, recently we've been looking at different properties, and what I've noticed, there's absolutely nothing in the MLS. You talk to real estate agents about this, and, you know, their eyes roll around the back of their head. And what I'm curious about, first off, you've really studied this, but if somebody is intent on getting good broadband and they're not moving to Chattanooga for EPB, how do you ascertain this before you actually make a home purchase and find out a disaster?
Well, I mean, you have to do your homework. As you said, you talk to a real estate agent, and you're probably not going to get good answers. There are broadband maps available. They're not always reliable.
Yeah.
It always helps to do a little bit of research, maybe ask around. Like, I'm a reporter, so I like to call people and ask and poll. And so sometimes that's the best way to do it, which requires a lot of work. It's not a great answer because it basically requires you to do a lot of homework, but it's worth it. I think the point that you made about this being a near and dear issue, I think broadband is a near and dear issue for everyone. It's as essential as electricity, as water, as anything else at this point. It's the difference between having job opportunities and not. And so having good broadband is critical. Problem is, it is the quality of broadband you're going to get, the quality of internet access you're going to get, varies greatly depending on where you go. And that's still a big problem in America.
It's a huge problem, and especially in rural communities. And you see small-town America falling apart by the day. And my biggest frustration is the city managers will come up with a 20-year plan, and they won't even mention broadband in it. And they're talking about how we want to attract business. I don't understand how you could try to attract business without a solid broadband infrastructure, yet this seems lost on the people who are in charge. Or worse yet, they go for a grant, they get bids, and they'll get bids, say, from the cable company, and they'll tout all these download speeds, and you look all through the bid, and they never mentioned upstream anywhere in there.
Yeah, that upstream is, I think it's an area of interest that really folks are just starting to understand now, right? Especially now, like today, like in the era of coronavirus, in the era where we're all working from home, or many of us are working from home, those of us fortunate to have jobs, having that upstream, having that upload speed is critical. It's interesting that you note that because, you know, the FCC defines broadband access still as 25 megabits download speed, but only 3 megabits upload. So there is, even from a regulatory perspective, there still is a bias towards download speed and not having it be equal.
Yeah, that figure, I know. I heard that when I first saw that, and I that was the end of my respect for the chairman right there. And I think Rosenworcel was the only one who was at least looking for 100 symmetrical. But the S word doesn't cross their list. And not only, as you well know, is upstream more necessary than ever if you're going to the cloud or what have you, but when you're talking something as asymmetrical as a gig, if you get it, and 10 megs, for instance, this is a disaster to use. And it's alarming to me that the cable companies get away with it, and yet the average consumer is clueless.
I think that's partly it's still an educational issue. Folks don't quite understand the benefit of upload speeds, right? They get download speeds, it's instantly understandable, but, you know, if anyone suffered through a video conference call with poor upload speed. They understand what the quality is like, how awkward those conversations get when the video feed gets glitchy, when you're out of sync, the latency is off. And so I think people are starting to understand now, and the fact that a lot of us are working from home is, I think, bringing more recognition to that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that'll be the silver lining, because as more and more of these school districts are talking about online education, fine, if they're in Scottsdale or Westchester or what have you, that's probably going to work. But in a number of places, they're about to descend into hell without realizing to the degree that they are. And then when you deal with the shared resources, the cable modems of the world, I love their weasel words, you know, yes, you get a gig, up to a gig or whatever, that up to in the real world might turn out to be 20 megs if you're lucky.
Absolutely. It's, you know, even if you're in just your own household, if there are enough devices on there that can really tax the bandwidth. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the broadband, the digital divide out in the rural America, and the fact that there's this homework gap being developed. It's not just rural America, right? There are even, you know, I live in New York. In New York City, there are parts of Queens and Bronx where you right. can't get dependable internet. But right now, with kids working, or not working, with kids at home and reliant on distant learning, they're falling behind every day because they just don't have adequate broadband.
And when you talk about areas like Queens or the Bronx that are so population dense, that's where I see the promise of 5G possibly materializing, because I don't think you're going to see 5G, oh yeah, maybe as L600 or something, but in any real sense as high band 5G when you don't have that population density. So what is the likelihood that the areas you're talking about that are so population dense and are so underserved are going to see a rollout of 5G in any way that matters?
It'll happen. Just like 4G LTE rolled out in a big way in these dense cities, you'll see it with 5G. You made the point about the low band spectrum being used right now, that the 600 megahertz band, for instance, being used by T-Mobile, that's what powers the nationwide network. It's moderately faster than what you would get for 4G, but it's not really the 5G that everyone's promising.
Right.
There is some level of excitement. I actually just talked to the T-Mobile CEO earlier this afternoon, and he talked a bit about using the spectrum that Sprint had,
mm-hmm.
Which is this mid-band spectrum mm-hmm. that is faster, but not quite as super fast as the spectrum that Verizon uses,
mm-hmm.
But has better range. So that's sort of a good compromise between range and speed. And, you know, it's out in five major cities, and I think Chicago is on the map if it's not already there. And it's that has the potential to kind of change things, because they're offering speeds that are something like three times what you would get with a fast 4G connection. So, and a lot of it is synchronous speed. So, or at least the synchronous upload download speed will get there in time. So I am excited for the promise of 5G, but I do caution folks to be patient with the rollout, because it arrived with a lot of hype. You know, last year was when it really went live, and I would say it was generally a disappointment. It was either the range was too small or the speeds were too slow. Either way, you were somewhat disappointed, but I think it's going to get better over time. And it is definitely seen as a potential solution here in densely populated cities, even further out. I don't know about rural America quite yet, but in other areas that are less densely populated, there are ways to use 5G spectrum to provide home broadband service, basically a replacement for your cable or for your DSL line.
Right, wireless broadband of sorts. Now, do you expect that would be mid-band, where you'd get up to 900 megabits if you're lucky?
It could be mid-band. It could actually be millimeter wave spectrum. I've talked to some folks over at Qualcomm, you know, the guys who do the mobile chips, a lot of smart guys there. You know, they made the point that right now, millimeter wave spectrum, which is that super high-frequency radio airwave that's really, really fast, but basically a short range. The way it's designed right now for cell phones, it's sort of spread out all over the place. It has to be ubiquitous, because that's how cell service or cell networks
sure.
work. But for fixed wireless broadband, or basically a home broadband replacement, what they could do is, you know, take a microwave dish and shoot a specific beam of spectrum into different homes. And it's a lot more efficient because it's just that tight beam that goes direct to someone's home, taps into a Wi-Fi router, and gives you much, much more significant speeds. I mean, with Verizon, they were touting 1-2 gigabits of download speeds and upload speeds that were pretty strong. I don't know if they were quite synchronous, but really impressive. And that was just using the kind of basic cellular infrastructure. And so being able to use that kind of something that's more optimized for home broadband, it's definitely possible. I mean, it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of investment and a lot of time, but it's definitely possible.
Yeah, right now, when you're talking the 39 gig range or whatever, your towers, if you get a mile, you're lucky. And so if you're talking about deploying it, where, and you're right, with a fixed somebody's house or whatever, it's certainly not the problem that it is when you're expecting cell service that's mobile. But at the same time, you're still looking, I think, at a lot of towers.
You are looking at more towers. You have to keep in mind that those towers are a little bit different because, as I sort of said before, the standard cell towers have to be closer to each other because they're kind of broadcasting in all directions, right?
Right.
So if you're able to get fiber connection into a tower that's near a bunch of homes, you can direct some of that, those antennas, so you don't need as many towers near each other.
Okay.
And those microwave dishes are able to kind of direct the signals into specific homes. It is definitely costly, and it will probably use more cell towers than what is currently being used. But I don't think it's as dramatic as the deployments you would see. Like if you theoretically would string together a full millimeter wave spectrum network in Chicago, which I know Verizon's in now, like they would have literally towers on every block, and that's
exactly
not really practical.
Right.
But the way they're doing it with fixed wireless is with these kind of direct shots, and that allows them to kind of extend the range. So it's not as dramatic. You don't need to have cell towers every 100 feet or so.
And, of course, if you can do this, and I always think of it as kind of ubiquities on steroid, because, you know, some of us are shooting it that way on lower speeds, of course. But if you can do this, then you avoid the infrastructure expense of, say, fiber to the home, which increasingly is cost prohibitive. I think even Google Fiber, didn't they stop laying fiber to the house?
Oh, it's interesting. They claimed they paused operations back in October 2016, but they actually announced two new cities this month, one in Utah, Mill Creek, and West Des Moines in Iowa. They've altered the plans a bit, so they're not the ones actually putting together or laying down the fiber themselves. I think they ran into the problem that basically everybody runs into when they want to build out a broadband network. It is crazy expensive.
Sure.
To dig up the ground, lay down fiber lines, and retrench everything. It's just infrastructure cost wise, it is too expensive. They abandoned their project in Louisville because they had created a new way to more cheaply, more efficiently lay down fiber. Turned out it wasn't particularly durable, and they ended up exposing the cable. So it's really difficult. But Google Fiber surprisingly is back. They've two announcements in the last couple of weeks, which is really kind of a shocker.
Well, it is to me too. And they're doing it with actual fiber. It's not some form of a fixed wireless scheme.
Yeah, no. The difference here is, again, they're kind of relying on the city to deploy out the infrastructure, do a lot of the heavy lifting for them, and
right.
They are actually deploying fiber optic lines there, so they're actually using fiber.
That's terrific. Well, and you do see this occasionally in new subdivisions, like in the building phase, that somebody will make a deal with somebody and will lay fiber. And, of course, it's easier before the subdivision is complete in the building phase. And I am seeing that in some areas. But in terms of timetable, I want to get into that. These are great things to expect. And if you've got any questions, of course, we'll get into the 5G rumors just because they're fun, you know, all the conspiracies, even though they're nonsense, they're a lot of fun. And all that and more. So 888-876-5593, that's 888-ROLLYE. I'm Raleigh James, it's WGN Radio. So I'm Raleigh James. It is WGN Radio, and I hope you'll join us, 888-876-5593. And hopefully you are taking a look at CNET, because it is one of my favorite sites. And if you're into anything tech, it's all there. Roger Cheng is the executive editor, and he's kind enough to spend an hour with us this evening. So I mean that, Roger. I love CNET. I think it's just a very well-done site. I want to revisit something here. You had mentioned, again, if you're looking for maybe a new house or relocate your business, broadband maps. I can't find anything reliable. And when I call places, I might as well be talking Romanian to find out real specifics. Like, for instance, in Phoenix, you'll hear that, well, CenturyLink has fiber to the premises and over 10%. And they show this ridiculous little map online. You can see, you can go to these places. You're not going to find it. At least I'm not going to find it. And so where can someone, and you talked before, it's not optimal no matter what, but what's the best route to try and find anything?
You know, it is a lot of grunt work, I think, going out and talking to people, because you know, I mentioned broadband maps. I mean, one of the biggest problems right now with getting access to broadband, you know, the official broadband maps that are out that the FCC has, they're faulty, right?
Yes.
Commissioner Rosenworcel has slammed those maps for being inaccurate. There are you know, according to some of these maps, if one house in a zip code or even multiple zip codes has broadband access, that entire area is considered covered.
Right.
And that's really what sort of the big problem is, and why it's so difficult to find strong broadband or to get any kind of consistent answer on whether or not the place you're looking at has broadband access. I think there's a lot of it's very murky the way they kind of advertise or show you where broadband access is available or where it isn't available. I think that's part of that's intentional.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. And if you're stuck, if you wind up in, heaven forbid, the most you're going to do is going to be cable broadband. As you well know, all nodes are not created equal. You can have somebody who says, oh, I love dealing with whomever, and they're in a great node. And then you've got somebody, they might only be a quarter of a mile away, who's just like, I'm out every darn night. And so, you know, you try to interview the neighbors, but many of them are fairly brain dead about it when you get right down to it. And the companies aren't going to tell you which are the good nodes. So it's just one of these things where, I guess if you find one, don't ever move. It's crazy. So timetable-wise, when will this no longer be the case?
Oh, across America,
yeah.
It's not going to be a problem. That'll be fixed for a long, long time. You know, if ever. I mean, there, you know, the folks are shooting for goals that are 10 to 20 years, you know, down the line, right? Which is somewhat realistic. I mean, if you really want to get broadband access to everyone, it's going to take a while to the infrastructure to build out. You know, as I explained earlier, just the cost and the time and the red tape of cutting into the city's infrastructure and laying down fiber optic cables, or anything really, it's difficult, and it's very time consuming. So I'm not optimistic. It's going to get solved anytime soon. It will take a while. Like I said, I'm hopeful that there's a silver lining that comes out of the coronavirus lockdown, is that there is more of a universal understanding that broadband access is like electricity was back in the 30s and 40s, and that there was a concerted effort to get electricity into rural communities, into basically every home in America, and there needs to be a similar drive now with broadband.
Oh, I agree with you 100% about that. You've also got political and economic considerations from the standpoint, you know, I mentioned EPB, which I know you're probably well aware of in Chattanooga, and I've also mentioned on the air before, I actually moved to Chattanooga when they became the gig city, and it was worth every bit of it. You can't stay there forever, though. But that said, of course, the horror was that EPB wanted to move on and do most of northern Georgia and the rest of that portion of Tennessee, and Verizon and Comcast and everybody and their brother, AT&T, Charter, joined hands and sued them. And this concept of that you're not going to serve an area, and in some of these cases, the people who had the charters weren't serving the areas, but you're going to go to court and prevent a municipality or a power company from serving it. That's delaying things unnecessarily.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you mentioned Chattanooga. We actually went down there back in 2015 to profile the city and how that gig connection really transformed it.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunately a sad fact that this happens. I mean, it's partly why Google halted their operations too. They faced a lot of legal challenges. The argument was that Google was cherry picking certain communities that, could afford it. That's been sort of, which is ironic because that's been the knock on some of these cable and telecom companies, is that they tend to build out in areas where the customers are more affluent, they're more willing to pay for service.
Of course.
You look at Verizon Fios, and, I think a couple years back, New York had sued the company because it hadn't fulfilled its obligations for rolling out Fios to every community in the city as opposed to just the ones who could afford it.
Yeah, and you do see that. And Fios, for people who have it, they're very happy with it. But is that the reason that Verizon pulled back and said, we're not going to offer this anymore?
I mean, the reason, I think, was ultimately cost and the direction of the company. The broadband business at that point was in decline. It was maturing, or it wasn't growing, right? Whereas the wireless side of things was growing like a rocket, and so it was investing in that. The money basically shifted towards wireless investment. Now, it's interesting, it's fitting, I guess, because some of the Fios infrastructure, those fiber optic lines, actually served to help augment their wireless coverage, right? Because they were able to deliver that wireless traffic across those fiber optic lines. But getting to that last mile, digging up those sidewalks to get fiber into direct homes, even Verizon kind of hit a limit there. I think initially when they announced this plan, two decades ago, it's been a while. There was a lot of skepticism because of the cost of that, and ultimately, I think they kind of fell short of their goals. They ended up halting that project a lot sooner than they expected because they hit that roadblock in being able to get to the last connection. What we're seeing now with a bunch of solutions is really trying to build out the core of the network and the middle part of the network, and then using some sort of wireless option as the last mile. If you can get to like 200 feet of a house,
right,
or a neighborhood, you can sort of broadcast the rest of it wireless. We actually, CNET had an exclusive on a project that Facebook unveiled on Monday. This robot actually that is able to balance itself on power lines and kind of like a spider, a spool out fiber optic lines that would wrap themselves around existing power lines. Will probably be more useful in developing countries. I'm sure the cost of deployment is a lot lower, and there aren't things like unions. But it's an interesting solution to getting some of that fiber infrastructure in place, at least in the middle
right.
part of the network. They still didn't have a real great solution for getting that last mile, but at least it was an interesting offer to expand or bulk up the rest of the network.
Yeah, and increasingly wireless is getting better, so certainly I would think that if it isn't already soon, it would be preferable over copper. But you mentioned the power lines, and of course the first thing I think about is BPL, which was just an absolute disaster, to say the least. But 5G, gotta go there, because I get a lot of mirth out of it, and you probably do too. The amount of things you see online that we have to stop 5G because it's going to kill us all.
Right. Yes, I see a lot of it too. In fact, I had another radio host forward me a YouTube video asking me if this is legit. He was not technically savvy, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I watched this video. It was an hour long video.
Oh my God.
I didn't watch all of it.
Okay.
But I have to admit, there's a very distinguished sounding narrator who's very serious. There are a lot of graphics and charts. And if I wasn't an expert in this area, I would be somewhat convinced. A lot of what they say sounds plausible. There are a lot of facts that if you know how 5G works or how the industry works, you recognize is completely false. But if you didn't know those nuances, a lot of the arguments made seem compelling. This idea that one of the arguments that I've heard is that, you know, millimeter wave spectrum, this high frequency spectrum, you know, the radiation from it will weaken your immune system and thus makes you more susceptible to the coronavirus, or actually is responsible for the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. And, you know, out in UK, we actually ended up talking to a bunch of these telecom technicians who were harassed, and in one case, I think assaulted, mm-hmm. Because folks so bought into these conspiracy theories that they decided to take action. There were cell towers and antennas that were burned down.
Yeah.
Even here in the U.S., the Department of Homeland Security had to issue a warning to the telecom companies mm-hmm. that their equipment might be in danger because folks who so bought into this were potentially going to take action. And I just want to be clear that this is totally fake. You know, a lot of the linkage I've also heard is that because China has so heavily invested in 5G and the coronavirus originated there, that the two are somehow linked.
Right.
And just to like dispel this notion, particularly because a lot of the theories point to millimeter wave spectrum as one of the culprits. Millimeter wave spectrum is actually largely only deployed here in the U.S. It's a bit of an anomaly. Everyone else uses that mid-band spectrum I refer to, the spectrum that Sprint has. And particularly in China, they don't use millimeter wave spectrum. And so, you know, the fact that there were outbreaks in China, there were outbreaks in Europe before it got to the U.S., like even if you just took that argument, you know, at face value, that is millimeter waves, it's going to kill us all. They're not even using it. So, like, the conspiracy theory just holds zero water.
Yeah, and it does sound good for somebody who knows absolutely nothing. I mean, I've seen some of this, too, where it's like, wow. But I have to laugh because we've been talking about how many towers are needed to deploy, period, that even if there was any plausibility in this, you'd practically be having to live at the tower. I mean, the distance alone would negate what we're saying. But it's out there, and while we can laugh about it, it worries me that this could slow down development. You know somebody's going to bring a lawsuit if they haven't already. So we're talking with Roger Cheng, the executive editor at CNET, overseeing breaking news, and there's a lot of it. If you've got any questions, we'd love for you to join us. I would anyway, and that's 888-876-5593-8888-ROLLYE on WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and it is WGN Radio, and you're welcome to interrupt me, and especially if you have any tech questions. I may not have answers, but I'm here to tell you Roger Cheng will, the executive editor at CNET. So 888-876-5593-8888-ROLLYE. You know, it was over, I guess, about 40 years ago when the CD was coming out, and I was radio editor for Billboard, and I ran this cartoon. It was a guy saying, well, I don't know. I heard the laser went crazy and killed a family of five. And I guess new technology, no matter when it emerges, has a certain amount of fear for people. And I assume that will never change. I'd bet in your career, Roger, you've heard conspiratorial horror stories about a lot more than 5G.
Oh, yeah. Although the conspiracy theories around 5G stick out the most, well, not just because it's the most recent, but really because folks have actually taken action.
Yeah.
You know, towers have been burned down. Technicians have been at least verbally assaulted. So, you know, this is, it's one thing to have a conspiracy theory and you talk about it and, you know, you have your suspicions, but it's another to take action. So that's sort of another level for me.
It is. It's sobering, and I have a cellular tower, and I got that letter that you're referring to in terms of there was a day that was designated that was supposed to be the day for this, and you know, kind of got the warning. Fortunately, in this country, little happened, but it is utterly chilling. Now, in waning moments, to change the subject somewhat, since you're all things tech, and I know you cover a lot more than broadband. So Apple and its new ARM chip, the rumor supposedly that the 13-inch MacBook Pro will ship with it by the end of the year. What do you think?
That surprised me a little bit. I thought, they shipped out a Mac Mini with a an early version of the ARM chip for developers, and I thought that would be sort of the first product that would ship out something really easy, because they wouldn't have to change anything from the current developer test unit that they're sending out. But you know, it does make sense in a way, because when you go to an ARM chip, you know, you get more battery efficiency, you have the ability to potentially make things thinner, and I don't know if it'll necessarily look thinner at this point, but in subsequent generations, you can see some of the benefits. Some of the benefits that you see in a phone, right, because ARM chips are what power phones and tablets. The idea of it being able to pop on and off really easily, you're not necessarily going to sleep with a computer or a phone like you would with a computer. So, it's an interesting rumor. If that's the case, that's a lot more exciting to me, because MacBook Air, MacBook Pro would be definitely something that I'd be more interested in getting relative to a Mac Mini.
Yeah.
It's definitely promising. It'll be interesting to see how they market this product too, and how they try to sell it, because ultimately, like, I get excited about it because I'm a giant geek and I love looking at sort of the internal aspects, internal components of the device. But for most people, they just want a computer that works and that works better. And so they'll likely tout it as more power efficient, and that's fine. But I'm curious to see how it does hold up next to sort of a traditional, Intel-based processor, which they'll still be selling versions of Macs with those as well. So it'll be, at some point over the holidays, they'll be sitting side by side.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, too. I agree with you. They probably won't change the chassis. They did their little updates. They improved the keyboard, all that. Marketing's funny, because the one thing that I would do if I were them to market it, of course, would kind of blast their current product, and that's to say that we've solved our thermal issues. But with that in mind, you're hearing a lot of anecdotal stories on these new MacBook Pros, and to an extent, the MacBook Airs. A lot of people complaining about thermal issues. What do you think's going on?
Yeah, I think that's the basically the root of the fact that these things are getting thinner and thinner, and they're kind of packing more batteries.
Mm-hmm.
I think the move to ARM will mitigate some of that, frankly. You've got basically a processor that runs a lot more efficiently, doesn't necessarily require as big of a battery, and so that's been kind of, I've dealt with that issue too. Like, I've got a relatively new MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
It gets pretty hot, especially if I start running a video conference on it.
Oh, yeah.
So I am looking forward to that day where we have more power efficient chips that don't necessarily singe the hairs on my leg.
Right, and so am I. I don't know that I want to be the first on the block to try it. I usually like for somebody else to get a little more of the R&D out of it than me as the beta user. But I guess for people who right now are saying, hey, I need a new laptop, should I wait? What do you think?
It's really hard to say right now, because we haven't actually had a chance to test it. We don't even have the developer unit, so
right.
We can't really test the early rudimentary differences. It really will depend on when we get like hands on with this thing, because the differences, the nuances are it's going to be the little things, and we're not going to know what they're like until we actually get our hands on those.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, we were talking security last night, and one of the things I brought up, and maybe you have an answer for this, is the thing I love about Mac is the ease and simplicity of Time Machine. It's just a joy. Why can't I have that on PC, and what's the closest I can get?
The reason why you can't have it on PC is, I think it's largely because Apple kind of controls everything, the hardware, the software. It's got sort of an end-to-end control of everything. And I think that makes it easier for Apple to kind of implement that. Windows, with Microsoft, you have to rely on hardware partners. And I think it's just something they haven't really done. And it's telling that even Apple doesn't really tout Time Machine all that much anymore. I've got one. I've even got an old airport that acts as the backup.
Right.
They stopped supporting those. They don't talk about Time Machine that much, so it's not necessarily a feature that I think that folks are touting as much anymore. A lot of it's sort of cloud backup now, right? It's not necessarily It's not exactly the same thing, but basically the idea that, you know, all of your data is stored on the cloud is kind of what everyone's pushing towards anyway.
They really are. And that gets back, you know, we've come full circle from the beginning of this conversation. That gets back to the upstream, because you're not going to the cloud without it. And I think two things are slowing it down, certainly in us senior plus citizens, is we still like the tactile experience of holding that backup drive, but also that fear of, well, I don't know about the security of the cloud. So, I think that younger people adapt to that very easily. It's a harder sell when you're talking about older people.
For sure. And the idea of the cloud is such a, if you didn't grow up with technology, it's right. such a foreign concept.
You
that
should.
it's somewhere physically in a place that we can't really tell you, but it's there in a collection of bits, and you can get it whenever you want. And so, like my parents, who, you know, they're retirement age, and you know they still won't use mobile payment systems. They won't
right.
They won't shop online on their phone. They won't do banking online, even though I've argued that in many cases it's actually more secure.
Right.
They'll take a physical check
yeah.
over, you know, PayPal or Venmo, and I often tell them, like, hey, that you could lose that check, that could just get torn up. But you know, these payment systems are pretty secure, and it's a comfort thing. It's they're not familiar with it. I think cloud services are very similar, although I will say my parents have gotten into it because I share my iCloud account with them.
Wow.
So they take a crazy amount of photos. I need every bit of cloud storage I can
right.
get.
Right,
people.
Right. And that's exactly the lore. When they find out they can share pictures of the grandkids and all that kind of stuff, well, maybe I'll try this. That's absolutely true. So, Roger Chang, thank you for spending an hour with us, and hopefully everybody will go to CNET. And by the way, I certainly today should have been doing all sorts of things, but I went to the Roger Chang page at CNET and read a good dozen articles you've done literally almost in the last several days. So good going, and hope to talk to you again.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. It was definitely a pleasure. If you do go to CNET, we've got a couple packages right now, one focusing on 5G, which I'm sure you're going to love,
yeah.
As well as one looking at the kinds of areas of technology where China is trying to dominate. So a series, we've got
yeah.
two series running kind of at the same time. So definitely worth your read or worth your time to get a chance to read.
I agree, and they've been wonderful, and thank you. We will talk again. Roger Chang.